Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, silliness, photos, videos, including videos of me trying to shoot myself with a sim gun, not a real gun, just to prove a point, at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Closing with me, Jack Jack and Melody!
Yay!
Yippee!
So, look at Melody, like, trying to press buttons over there, and...
And she's actually turned her mic off.
No, I didn't.
You did.
I know the on and off button. Like, I'm not super smart, but I've gotten those two things down.
Mm.
On, off. And cough, buddy. See?
Wow. Wow. Hey, guys, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night, and TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 night vision goggle to the IR Patrol thermal monocular and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC now with financing. Own or finance the night. So, we are joined by Claude Werner. Claude, how's it going?
Doing very well, John. How about yourself?
Oh, I cannot complain. Thank you very much, sir, for taking time out of your day to speak to us.
So, absolutely.
For those that have not heard your previous appearances on the show, can you just say who you are, what you do, and we'll hop right into what we're going to talk about?
I'm a retired Army officer, a former National Director of Real Estate Research for Deloitte, and former chief instructor for the Elite Rogers Shooting School, and considered by many to be one of the more analytical people in the industry.
I would strongly agree with that. Strongly agree with that.
Almost like he's a professor of some sort.
Like a tactical professor?
Oh, that's good. He should market himself that way.
Oh.
You should get that website really quick, Claude.
Wait. I think you already did. Oh, that's the joke. I've got it now. So what are we going to talk about today? I asked you late last night, and you were gracious enough to say, sure, with very little notice. What do you think is... something that is not spoken to enough in our industry that we're going to speak to today?
One of the things that I've been very interested in over the past 3 years, and it's Craig Douglas that got me started on this, is the idea of the various strategies, tactics, and options that we have for personal protection. And I think in total, the industry doesn't focus on that as much as they should, or much as we should, because I'm, you know, very much a part of the industry.
Right.
But we talk a lot about guns, and then we talk about shoot and no shoot, as if we have this black and white decision process. And as I've researched the decision process, a lot of it, as you know, I work on Boyd and various other influential thinkers from the past, I think that we're making a mistake in only portraying the options that we present to our students as being, you have a gun and you use it or don't use it.
Right.
And I think that's a problem, because here in Georgia, where I live, just like in every other state, you have different levels of force that is used against people in a criminal way. And the responses that the people have to, or let's say are legally allowed to use, vary as well. and I run into this in my classes all the time. And when I do a lot of short presentations for other people's classes,
right,
about this. And one of the things I like to do is to role play where I'm intimidating, especially women, because they're newer to this than most guys are, and also are more open and less stupid about it. And I'll come up and do a role play with them where I'm acting in sort of an intimidating, but not a way that implies that I'm going to cause them death or serious bodily injury.
So, Craig's idea of like the don't shoot yet.
Well, Nadia, I'm going to take it even one step further.
Okay.
That if I come up to a woman, or some criminal comes up to a woman, and he's some drunken, you know, guy, or just some dude that's not thinking right in his head, and he's coming up with the, hey, baby, you looking really good, and I'd like to get with you. That is not, under any stretch of the imagination, a shoot scenario, or even appropriate for displaying a lethal weapon.
Right.
But inevitably, what the ladies in these courses who have sort of been inoculated with this shoot, no shoot decision will do is they will pantomime reaching for a gun.
Huh.
And I have to tell them, you know what? The best that you can hope for is that you are going to get your weapons carry license taken away from you and have a criminal record. And at worst, you may spend some time in the can, because guns are simply not appropriate when you're being intimidated. But that's the way we present it, and I think that's a problem.
Let me ask you this. Do you even think that's a realistic reaction on their part, or is that based off of the environment they're in when that scenario occurs?
That's actually a good question, and I'm not sure. But I do know that without the training, and I'm doing air quotes on training that they've been getting, it's certainly in their mind now in a way that it wouldn't have been before.
Right.
And that's a problem when we present that as this is your option. And I have done this. I've been doing this for, I don't know, about four years now, and run into that a lot where people say, well, pepper spray doesn't work, or gun is more powerful than pepper spray, or this or that. And, well, first of all, pepper spray does work. The FBI says it's about 80-85%, even in the context of trying to subdue the criminal and bring him into custody, mm-hmm. which is not what our object is.
Right.
Our object is simply to break contact. Well, you know, if you spray a decent pepper spray in the guy's face and he can't see you, it makes it fairly easy to escape, which ultimately is our goal. It's just to get out of here. You know, I don't want to deal with you. Goodbye.
Right.
And then second, that once again, when we get back to this legal aspect of it, it's only appropriate to shoot people when you're in danger of serious bodily injury or death. And the whole disparity of force legal theory, people need to keep in mind that that's talked about as if it's a legal fact.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, it is not. It's a legal theory which works sometimes and does not work other times. You know, the Kimball shooting in Maine a couple of years ago is a perfect example of it.
Right.
I mean, if there was ever a classic example of disparity force, that was it. But the fact of the matter is Kimball's going to spend the rest of his life in prison.
Right.
When in fact, if he had just painted the guy's face orange, that whole situation would have just gone away. And that's what I'm thinking is that there's a broad array. I've identified at least 8 different options that we just don't talk about, and I think that's a problem.
Well, and, you know, so the other thing, too, is if you know, using the Kimball, and we'll put a link up to this in the show notes, or at least we'll try to. And we only got about a minute left in this segment, and then we'll get more in depth in it. I think Melody has a question too. But using the Kimball case as an example, had he deployed pepper spray And had that not been effective, would he have had a better argument to utilize lethal force at that point afterwards?
That's a possibility.
And that
it's certainly something that if he had a good attorney, he could have raised the issue. But since it never, you know, started, then the issue could never be raised.
Right. All right, cool. We'll be talking a little bit more with Claude Werner. Right now, you are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Events, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Events, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Sig Sauer. Now, with more options. We're not all the same, and our carry gun shouldn't have to be either. Sig Sauer gives you choices. With more models than the Bible's got Psalms, it's never been easier to find a Sig Sauer that fits your needs. From the extremely versatile Striker-fired P320 with modular grip frame, to the Legion Series P226, the single-stack P225A1, or the entry-level SP2022, Sig Sauer makes a model that's right for you. Just don't ask for Callahan full-bore auto-lock. They don't make that yet. Sig Sauer, when it counts. So we're speaking with Claude Werner, the tactical professor. Melody, you had a question for Claude, didn't you?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, for a lot of the, you said particularly with women who kind of, you know, pantomime going for a gun in an inappropriate time, have you ever been able to ask them about their history and whether there's something that maybe they are going off of an old violent attack that could have gone that direction? Or what do you think of that along those lines?
I have not gathered that data, Melody, and I'm glad that you said that, because that's a data point that I haven't thought about capturing in the past, and I'm going to work on that in the future. So thank you.
Oh, all right. Well, you're welcome.
Well, and that's
now I know that in several cases where I have gotten to know the women on a personal basis because they were associated with the trainer involved, that in fact that was not the case.
Okay.
That it was purely their indoctrination. But that's a small segment of the sample that I've done that pantomime with. So I don't want to broadcast that across the spectrum universally.
Right. And I certainly, and I'm sure you have as well, Claude, encountered students that, for lack of a better word, were jumpy because of something in their past that had happened to them.
Oh, I have no doubt of that.
Yeah.
That people sometimes, you know, have bad incidents, and it shapes their perspective about what to do in the future. You know, Ron Reisner from the FBI massacre in Miami is a perfect example of that in his second incident.
Well,
where he just said, "I've seen this rodeo before, and I'm not riding that horse."
Well, so let's talk about that real quick. Reisner was one of the agents involved in the 1986 FBI Miami shootout. Number of FBI agents killed or severely injured, with two very dedicated criminals. And then I'll let you pick up the rest of the story, Claude.
Well, years later, Reisner had gone back into the sort of the bank examining phase of FBI, whatever they call that, and so he was not directly involved in catching violent criminals, so he'd gone back to carrying a J-frame.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a bank doing whatever they do in those procedures, and some guy comes in and proceeds to rob the bank, and Reisner sees this and says, well, you know, like I say, he'd seen this before. He just pulled out his J-frame, walked up behind the guy, and shot him in the back of the head without warning.
Well, there you go.
So he had made his decision. I am not ever going to let somebody get the drop on me or put themselves in a position of advantage, and I'm going to solve this situation. So there are undoubtedly people that have that happen to them, and that's both good and bad.
Right.
In the sense that they're primed to take action. And if they thought about the actions ahead of time and the consequences, then they're probably going to be in pretty good shape because they won't freeze. On the other hand, if they only have one response programmed, then, and it's an inappropriate response, then they might run into a problem. Now, in Reisner's case, let's face it, the guy was golden in the FBI.
Yeah.
What's the chances that he would ever, short of committing an out-and-out, you know, premeditated murder or something like that, what's the chances he would ever be disciplined by the FBI for anything?
Right.
Practically zero.
Well,
and in that case, since he was a federal officer, in the course of his duties, he was completely immune from being, you know, having anything done to him by the local authorities. So he was okay, and he was a smart guy, and he knew what he could do, so he did it.
Well, and that's the other thing too. I see some people that espouse tactics or techniques or whatever that you can get away with if you're operating under the color of the law and you have protection as a federal agent or a state agent or whatever, that maybe won't work out so well for you as a civilian.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's another problem where I don't find in many cases that the influx of both law enforcement and military people into our community is always positive. Now, many of them do bring positive things to the table, but in many cases, they are victims of their past experiences and their past training. And let's go back to our colleague, Rob Pincus. The context is different.
Yeah.
And that's incredibly important that, you know, what I could have gotten away with or would have probably in some cases gotten medals for in the military would put me in the can in civilian life. And we have to make sure that we understand that as trainers when we're formulating our model for people to follow.
Right. Right. So what are some other things to consider? We kind of like wandered a little away from the first segment topic, and we'll sort of meander back that way.
Well, as I say, there are I think about this as three levels, if you will: strategies, tactics, and options. And strategies are ultimately driven by our goals. And there are all sorts of goals, some of which are laudable and some of which are stupid, frankly, that people espouse in this business and in their following of us in the business. For instance, not too long ago, there was a guy who pulled a gun on a shoplifter and was subsequently arrested by the police.
Right.
And the police asked him, "Why did you do that?" And his response, and this is verbatim, he said, "I wanted to be a hero."
That's a bad reason to carry a firearm, in my opinion.
I agree. But that was his goal, was to be a hero. Other ones that I have encountered are play police officer. There are no shortage of people that you and I know, John, that, you know, they think about, or I won't say no, because that our circle, I think, is kind of past that.
Yeah.
But that we see people all the time, and they don't say it specifically that I want to play police officer, but their actions clearly indicate that that's what they have in mind, that they're enforcing society's mores.
Right.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Then some of the other ones are good. You know, protect yourself, protect your family, remain financially solvent. I think that's probably something that only the legal part of our community, guys like Marty Hayes and Masada Yub and Andy Branca and so forth, they talk about that. But I don't think a lot of people have any idea about just how costly shootings are, even when they're utterly defensible and you know, completely in the right.
Yeah. And you're going to spend a lot of money to you know, if you fire actual rounds at another human being, it doesn't matter if you know, shot a dude wearing a suicide vest, beheading, you know, 20 nuns on their way to the convent on Sunday, that's still going to cost you some money.
Or at least you have to assume it will.
Right.
It may not. And I'm familiar with several where, you know, fortunately I live in a free state of Georgia where the police and the district attorneys are not too enthused about prosecuting or even arresting innocent civilians who defend themselves. But you go in, but the fact of the matter is I travel,
yeah,
just like everybody else, to other states. And as soon as you cross your state line, Well, once again, the context changes. You know, and then the final one that I run into every now and again is there are a few people, very few, and I'm glad of this, there are a few people that their goal is to kill someone.
Yeah.
In a justifiable way. Dude, you need to have your head examined.
Well,
That's just a problem.
And, you know, I think that kind of speaks to, and we got to go to break again, but, you know, I see a lot of people be like, how can we get more people to carry? And I think the better question is, how can we get more people that should be carrying? You know,
I like the way you phrase that, John. That's very well put.
Yeah. So we're talking with Claude Werner right now, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Vance, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Vance, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, we're speaking with Claude Werner. Before the break, Claude, we were talking about some bad reasons why people carry firearms, some other things like that, and then I had to interrupt you to pay for the show, so I apologize.
No worries.
What's to be done about all this?
Well, so that leads into what I think is an important discussion, and that is, what actually are our options? So we have the one that is obviously stated in the community, and that's applying lethal force. And in some circumstances, that's utterly appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're being threatened with death or serious bodily injury, then lethal force is certainly an appropriate response. Let's say, is it necessarily the best response? That's situational dependent, but it's certainly an appropriate and legal response. But then we also have less lethal force, verbalize and communicate, which is one of my hot buttons, that we don't teach people how to talk while they've got a gun. And I run into this a lot in training where I remember very specifically one of the first times I ran into it, I was just running a lady through a short version of the NRA personal protection in the home shooting part. And so I said, okay, now you're going to draw your pistol. You're going to point it at low ready below the subject's feet, because I'm very, really big on not pointing guns at people until you've made the shoot decision.
Right.
And then you're going to say, stop. Don't come any closer. And her response to me was, I can't say that. And so I said, yes, you can, and you are going to. So go ahead. Just repeat those words after me. Stop. Don't come any closer. Stop. Don't come any closer. Okay. That's a good. And that's literally how it came out. And so I said, okay, that's a good start. Now let's put a little more volume on it.
Uh-huh.
Stop. Don't come any closer. And then so it started coming. So I had to run her through five iterations of that, John, mm-hmm. before it actually came out as, stop, don't come any closer. If we don't teach people to do that, then they won't do it. Because one of the things that I observed, and people talk about competition as not having value in the training community and blah, blah, blah. Well, one of the things, as you know, I was heavily involved in IDPA for 18 years.
Right.
Not only as a shooter, but I was a match director. I was chief safety officer at the national championship several times. Just did a lot.
Right.
On the behind the firing line side, if you will.
Right.
And one of the things that I can say my experience was is that I could watch people when the buzzer went off, their conscious mind stopped working.
Yep.
I could just see it on their face. That the conscious mind stopped working. So to expect people, and this is my big problem with the way people talk about the OODA loop, that you're going to outthink your opponent in the moment. That's ridiculous. It's just not going to happen. So if we don't teach people to do things like verbalize, they're just probably not going to do it. There's a few of them who might. They're very verbal people or whatever, but most of them are not. So, but that's a very powerful tool. I mean, that fellow that shot his son up in your area, if he had just said, "Who's there?"
Yeah.
You know, well, when he gets the "Dad, it's me" back, the FBI calls that a clue. So verbalizing and communicating, that's another one of our tools and options that we can use.
And what Claude's, what Claude's talking about is an incident where a father dropped his 14-year-old son off to the bus stop. The son decided to skip school and wanted to play video games all day, is what they figured. Came back to the house and gained entry to the house via a basement window. Dad had forgot something that he needed for work, heard someone breaking into the house, went down in the basement and fatally shot his son.
Right.
And that is not whether it ended up being a, you know, he did not get prosecuted for that, but his life is over either way.
He will never sleep a night's sleep again.
Yeah.
I'm certain of that.
Yeah.
So then another thing that we have as an option is simply to withdraw. We don't teach people, you know, stand your ground is a last resort when you cannot withdraw.
Right.
But getting out of the situation is always one of our options. Now, and another one is to surrender. Now, sometimes, despite the fact that we say never gets taken to the crime scene or, you know, the second crime scene, on occasion, surrender is actually an option, at least temporarily.
Yes.
Now, one of Tom Gibbons' students had an incident that was on Tom's DVD about this where they had the drop on the dude. He's got a gun to his head. Well, if he tried to draw, they would have just blown his brains out. But he managed to convince them to take him to an area where he could get his gun out and then defend himself, and the situation worked out okay.
Right.
So surrender is one of our options. How about just waiting and gathering information? Just wait. You know, like when you wake up in the middle of the night, you hear that bump, is the first thing that you do, jump up, grab your gun, hopefully grab your flashlight, start searching your house?
No.
Not
unless I've heard very specific things. And honestly,
exactly. The
only thing that would get me to do that is breaking glass.
Yeah, that's it. Or probably your wife screaming or a child screaming or something of that nature. But otherwise, what you're going to do is lay there and say, "What was that?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to listen a little bit. Well, then if it continues, then you decide to take a further action. But then you might listen and you say, "Oh, that was next door. So I'm not going to worry about it, or I'm going to pursue a different course of action. I'm going to go to the window and look out and see what's going on there, maybe, you know, shine a flashlight out there or something."
Right.
So we have this. Those are just right off the top of my head options that I think that are not discussed adequately in the community. And that's why I developed that module, STOP, Strategies, Tactics, Options for Personal Protection, that I'm including in the class that I'm doing with William April next month, because I think that that's something that we need to do as a community to start getting people thinking more broadly about how we're going to protect ourselves under a large umbrella.
Well, so we got a couple minutes left in this segment, and then we can get into it in a little bit more detail. Tell us about that class with Dr. William April.
William and I are putting on a 2-day class here in the Atlanta area. It's actually going to be in Norcross, which is a northeast suburb of the city. And the topic, we had two topics.
Mm-hmm.
William is going to be talking about the crazy criminals, what I like to call his crazy criminal talk, where he goes into some of the various psychologies that make them dysfunctional and then how they apply those psychologies to victimize us. And then my side of it is strategies, tactics, and options. And then I've developed some very specific decision-making exercises, and I actually have a proprietary decision-making process that I've developed. Because one of the issues, another issue I have is that when we talk about actually having people do things in force on force, they get a couple of runs through at a run speed.
Yeah.
But that's not how we learn as adults.
Right.
We learn through a number of repetitions and through a wall, crawl, walk, run model. And so I've developed a system for facilitating that, that I think will get people a lot more repetitions, that they'll get to consider how they're actually going to do things. So that's going to be October 8th and 9th here in Atlanta. And if somebody goes to my tacticalprofessor.com website, they can find out more information about the class.
Perfect. And we'll, you know, we'll remind people of that at the end of the next segment. I want to ask you about this decision-making process and things like that that you are talking about. But unfortunately, we've only got a minute left in this segment. So I'm going to ask you just a real super quick question that we can get more in depth on next segment. Do you think that the training industry has greatly improved or not improved at all as far as talking about these issues in the last 20 or 30 years?
I think it's gotten a lot better, and it's better because there's just more information out there. And the gun sight, in the days of gun sight, there really wasn't much talk about the legal process.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've gone to the point where, for people who are interested, there's a lot of information about the legal process and the legal ramifications, and I think that's really good.
Perfect.
I think there's also a certain amount of tactical information that's come out too, and that's also good.
Perfect. We're speaking with Claude Werner right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Events, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Events, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen Sidekick to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell "Aziz Light" ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. You're such a nice guy, helping them see through their eyelids that way. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire, and now, as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 30% off almost every product at the Surefire.com web store, everything except suppressors and batteries, by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS. That is ALLTHELUMENS, no space, at Surefire.com. So anyway, we're speaking with Claude Werner. Now, Claude, before the break, you were sort of talking about this decision-making model that you have come up with. Why not tell us about that?
In classic, as it's developed, force-on-force scenarios, that training that's become popular in about the past 15 years, and I was very heavily involved in this for about 10 years with the former personal defense training, The Test, where I was a role player, got to watch people. One of the better experiences, perhaps one of the best experiences of my training career. However, those classes mean that a person will get somewhere between, in a full day's training, 6 to 8 runs, if you will, through different decision processes, and they're all done at run speed.
Right.
In the adult training model that most of us accept, we learn at a crawl, walk, run pace. Well, if we don't put in the crawl and the walk before the run, it's just been unclear to me that people are getting as much out of it as we could. So what I did was I developed a model, and frankly, the patent process is still underway, so I can't be too specific about it. But what I did was I found that problem of not enough runs done too fast, and I came up with a training model whereby I can run a classroom full of people through about 30 decision processes in 2 hours and give them the full range of their decision model, of their decision options, and let them pick and then justify them. And they can do that, I'm going to start the pace out relatively slow and then start picking it up so that they eventually have to move relatively rapidly. I'm not sure that we always have to move at the run speed, but let's talk about learning to do things at a fast walk is probably a pretty good idea.
Right.
So that's one of the things that I've worked on. Now, I had mentioned to you yesterday that one of the other decision tools that I've come up with, and since this one is not patentable, I just found out yesterday, I'm just going to throw it out for folks to enjoy, is take a deck of cards, take all the face cards out, and shuffle the deck. Cut the deck and turn one of the cards over, and that suit then becomes your threat suit.
Okay.
Put it back, take that one and put it aside so you have a reminder of what your suit is, because you and I know from playing cards it's not too hard to forget, well, what suit was I actually concerned with?
Right.
Then you start flipping the cards over, and when your suit comes up, then you will draw and fire the number of shots that's on that number card.
Okay.
Now, you only start with 6 rounds of the gun, and all your magazines or speed loaders are 6 rounds, or if you have a J-frame, 5 is fine.
Yeah.
Well, then you have to keep in mind how many shots have I fired, and then you may have to reload in the middle of the string.
Right.
In fact, you might even have to reload twice if you have a J-frame, because you might have 1 round in the gun, and you might get a 10 card. Well, then you have to do a lot of blasting. This sounds like a pretty simple exercise. It's another one of these ones that sounds really simple, and nobody that I have put through the drill has been able to do it correctly.
Huh. That sounds a challenge, Claude. I like
that's
challenge.
Right. It sounds like a challenge. It's kind of like the five-hat-five drill that I developed.
Right.
Everybody thought that was simple.
Until
they started shooting it, and then they went, "No, this is kind of hard," you know. And the problem is that when you apply 100% standards to things, the whole situation gets a lot harder.
Right.
That's our problem with the 70%, 80% standard is that, most people can get pretty good at doing things at 70 and 80%. Unfortunately, as I like to say, every round you fire that doesn't hit your intended target is heading straight for a busload of nuns and orphans being followed by a limousine full of district or criminal civil litigation attorneys who are on a conference call with the district attorney.
Right.
Well, that's 100% standard.
Yeah.
We have to hit our target. We right. don't have qualified immunity like the police.
Right.
So that's why I'm trying to develop these drills that get people to think about what they're doing. We have to teach people to think about what they're doing when they have a gun in their hand.
Well, why do you think that? Why do you think historically that's not been more of a focus, or have people tried to teach it and just don't know how to teach it?
Well, I think that, for one thing, the gun is an instrumentality, and it's like any business model where it's much easier to sell something that you can see and touch than it is to sell an intangible.
Right.
You know, selling insurance, it's tough.
Yeah.
For that matter, selling firearms training, it's tough. It's easy to sell guns.
Yeah.
Selling training to learn how to use them, that's tough. So the gun has, and then doing things with the gun that don't require much thinking, those are the things that have been easy to do and easy to figure out how to train. And I think that the soft side of the decision-making and so forth, that's been given a lot less thought, simply for two reasons. One, it's harder to sell, and two, frankly, it's harder to think about.
Hmm. Do you think that Okay, we're coming up on the end of the show, but let me ask you this. Do you think that people do not consider ways that having a firearm may hurt them enough?
Oh, I'm absolutely sure of that. You know, the stat that I came up with that I'm sure you've heard me repeat is that every day in this country, somebody shoots themselves unintentionally with their own gun.
Right.
Twice a week, they shoot a family member or someone like that that they shouldn't have. I have no idea how many times children get access to guns and shoot themselves. So those are all those what I call negative outcomes that I don't think people consider much at all. And only for the fact that pure dumb luck protects people a lot of times, that's what keeps them out of trouble, not because they've thought about what they ought to be doing.
Right. And to be clear, you and I are not encouraging people not to have firearms. We're encouraging people to be responsible adults and consider, the pluses and minuses to any behavior or, item or whatever, and take reasonable steps to mitigate risk.
It's a gun is an investment.
Yep.
And you would be foolish to pursue any financial investment without thinking about what the risks about that were, just like with a gun.
Yeah.
The principle is exactly the same, and that's something that I learned very well from my time in the accounting industry, that whole risk-reward and risk mitigation scenario that you mentioned.
And you certainly have to be honest with yourself. Now, unfortunately, we are out of time. So, Claude, I very much appreciate you taking time out of your day to come talk to us. Your website, again, just real super quick.
TacticalProfessor.com.
Thanks.
And they can find all the information about the upcoming class with William April on it.
All right. Thank you so much, Claude. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.